This is Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading episode 25 of Here's How. Ireland has some of the most expensive alcohol in Europe, but there's a proposal to make some of it even more expensive. In this episode, I'll discuss the likely effects with a speaker from Alcohol Action Ireland.
Here's How is Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast. Make your view heard. Just dial 076 603 5060 and tell the world what you're thinking. Your voicemail may be included in the next podcast. You can find tips on recording your contribution and other ways to contact the show at hereshow.ie/call.
There's no shortage of thigh-slapping hilarity in stories from Irish courts. Local newspapers often have stories of people almost rolling in the aisles over a witticism from some judge or other. The latest one is from Judge Patrick Durkin of Killaloe District Court. The man he was convicting was Martin McNamara, who in his 25 years, or 7 years since he turned 18, has clocked up a total of 321 previous convictions. That's almost one a week. It includes 31 previous convictions for driving without insurance, which was the charge that he was again convicted for, along with another charge of driving while disqualified. The wisecrack that got Judge Durkin into the national papers was when he said that McNamara should contact the Guinness Book of Records, he had so many convictions. Laugh? We nearly did. The fact that a judge can make a joke of the complete failure of the system of justice shows just how detached he is, just how detached the judiciary and the entire legal profession is from the reality that they inflict on others. The fact that someone can have hundreds of convictions clocked up by such a young age is ample proof that our criminal justice system is a farce. I can almost hear the response of the average barrister. Oh, it's awful, they'll say, shaking their head and rolling their eyes. But sure, you can only do your best to work within the system. How about no? There have been Herculean attempts at reforming the Irish legal system. Mostly, like Alan Shatter's 400-page legal reform bill, they've been run into the sand. They get buried in objections, consultations, considerations and committees. Huge amounts of time and energy was wasted in a years-long debate over whether judges and barristers should wear wigs. In the end, it was made optional, with the comment that in front of some judges you would be well advised to wear them. So it's not compulsory, but you have to do it. When such a tiny reform takes so much effort, what hope is there for real reform? The other thing that judges and barristers will tell you, and tell anyone who's willing to listen, as often as they're willing to listen, is that they're really trying to help people. They're trying to help their clients, they're trying to help the accused get their life together, they're trying to help people come to an agreement, they're trying to help people get compensation, they're trying to help society. They'd have you believe that really, when they finished school, it was a toss-up between them going into law or heading off to Kolkata to join Mother Teresa's order of nuns. I don't buy it. Have a look at the car park in the forecourts and you won't buy it either. For some reason, BMW and Mercedes dealers are strangely high up on that list of people they want to help. There's a lot to know about the legal system in Ireland. That's one thing that protects them from reform. It's just plain complicated, and few people outside the profession know much about it. But we don't need to know much. We just need to know three things. The first thing is that it doesn't work. That's not a surprise. The second thing we need to know is that the legal profession is powerful. And the third thing is that the legal profession benefits from the current setup. The inefficiency, the repeat offenders, the delays, the massive costs, the hierarchical system, the absence of competition, the denial of justice to people who can't afford it, the miscarriages of justice, the rapists and high finance criminals who walk free after being convicted. they all benefit the legal profession. They make them richer. When those three things go together, particularly when the people running the system benefit from the system being a mess, then the system will stay a mess. And that's the real reason why barristers and judges are laughing like hyenas when they see someone with 321 convictions in 7 years.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? If you want your point of view heard, dial 076-603-5060 and leave a contribution for the show. The lines are open 24/7 and you can find tips on how to record a good contribution and other ways to contact the podcast at hereshow.ie/call.
I'm joined on a Skype line now by Conor Cullen. He is the Head of Advocacy and Communications at Alcohol Action Ireland. Conor, minimum alcohol pricing has been in the news. Can you tell me exactly what is minimum alcohol pricing?
Yeah, absolutely, William. Minimum unit pricing is a floor price beneath which alcohol cannot legally be sold. So this floor price is based on the amount of pure alcohol in a product, and it's measured in grams. So to give you an idea how that works and will work, one standard drink in Ireland contains 10 grams of alcohol, and the Public Health Alcohol Bill provides for a minimum unit price of €1 per standard drink, or 10 cents per gram of pure alcohol. Now, to put that in real terms for people, I suppose what that would mean is if you had a pint that you would get in a pub, that would generally contain about two standard drinks. So the minimum unit price for a pint would be €2. But what minimum unit pricing is, it's a targeted measure, and it's designed really to stop strong, cheap alcohol being sold at the very low prices it currently is in the off-trade in Ireland, particularly supermarkets, where alcohol is frequently used as a loss leader and sold below cost, because the easy and widespread availability of such cheap alcohol has contributed to a dramatic shift in our alcohol purchasing and consumption habits. And we now buy the majority of our alcohol in the off-trade in Ireland. And a minimum unit price is able to target the very cheap alcohol relative to its strength, because the price of an alcohol product under minimum unit pricing is determined by, and it's directly proportioned to, the amount of alcohol in that drink. So I can give you some examples, if you like, of prices.
Sure, go ahead.
Prices that, you know, I said it would be easy to put it in some real terms for people. So a pint of Heineken, which has 5% ABV, would have a minimum unit price of €2.25. A pint of Budweiser, which is 4% ABV, so it's less strong than Heineken, would therefore have a minimum unit price of €1.80. So a measure of whiskey in a pub, would have, because it has a 40% ABV, would have a minimum unit price of €1.12. Now, you can tell already from what I'm saying that a minimum
There's no pub in Ireland that has drinks that cheap.
Absolutely. So there, no pub, club or restaurant in Ireland is going to be in any way affected by a minimum unit price. And a lot of the alcohol in the off-trade won't be affected either, but the strongest, cheapest alcohol will. So to give you examples of where it will come into effect is something like a 500 ml can of Devil's Bit Cider. Now, that's quite strong. That's got a 6% ABV. So that will have a minimum unit price of €2.37 under the new legislation. A 500 ml can of Dutch Gold, which is not a strong...
What are those cans selling for? If I went round to my local offie, what would they cost me now?
Well, you could get many cans now of more premium brands and not, but you'll get them for €1 a can, no problem, or less under many offers. And that won't be happening under a minimum unit price because, you know, a can of Dutch Gold, for example, would be €1.58 under MUP. A can of Tesco Lager would be €1.32. So they wouldn't be able to sell
these prices. So this is the thing that there's kind of a variety of alcohol products available in supermarkets and off licenses. Some of them are fairly premium prices and they have TV advertising. Some of them look quite like yellow pack cans of beer. And that's really where you get the cheapest amount of alcohol per money. And essentially what you're doing is you're saying to the supermarket or the off license, you're not allowed to sell that cheaper beer for any less than the more expensive beer.
No, they won't be the same price. And you know, what it does is it doesn't set it. And that would essentially be, you know, you'd have an upper limit, but what we're talking about here is a floor price. So, I mean, cans of Guinness or cans of Heineken will still cost more than the very cheapest alcohol. they're not going to be brought to such a level that they're all going to be sold at the same price. But we have
not much more.
Yeah, we have a situation at the moment, really, where if you walk into a supermarket today, cans of beer, strong beer, are being sold for less than bottles of water. And that really is the situation we find ourselves in. Alcohol has been used as a loss leader. It's been sold below cost. And why that really matters, and why this targeted approach of MUP can achieve things that other alcohol pricing programs can't achieve, is because the strongest, cheapest drinks are the alcohol products generally favored by people who are drinking the most, who seek to get as much alcohol as they can for as little money. But also, crucially, the most price-sensitive alcohol consumers in this country are also young people. And when I say young people, I also mean minors. I'm talking about children. Children who can get their hands on alcohol, and very young people going up to young students in their early 20s, because they generally have the least disposable income and they want to get drunk quickly in the current environment and for as little money as possible. So they're also, you know, the heaviest consumers at that end of the scale. And that's why, you know, you have people who are most vulnerable to alcohol-related illnesses and health and other problems are favoring this strong, cheap alcohol that they can get quite easily in the off-trade. And that's why we need to intervene really on that end of things. You know, and that we don't need, we're not arguing that we need to raise the price of all alcohol, even in the off-trade. As I said, it won't affect the, you know, it won't affect the price of any alcohol in the pubs, clubs, or restaurants. So the price of a pint, for example, won't change because of MUP. And the other thing about minimum unit pricing is the less you drink, the less you're going to be affected by it. I mean, people who drink at a lower risk.
There's two questions I want to ask you about that, and I'll put the two of them together. The first one is, do you have proper academic research to indicate that this will work? And number two, what price is that academic research based on?
Yes, the main academic research for this this proposal in Ireland was conducted by the University of Sheffield, who also conducted the impact analysis here in this country. And they were they're the experts in this area, and they're the same people who did the modelling for Scotland, which introduced minimum unit pricing in 2012, though that has been subject to a legal challenge since then. But what the University of Sheffield analysis, which was carried out for the Department of Health, and if anyone wants to read it, it's on our website, alcoholireland.ie. That's a very
I'll put a link to it on the webpage. Yeah.
That's a very thorough analysis of different levels of minimum unit price and what they would achieve. And they looked at the different, and it is a modeling exercise, but it's a very thorough one. And it looks at the impact of a minimum unit price in a number of different ways. But that analysis, you know, eventually the government decided that it wanted to introduce a €1 minimum unit price. Now, the Sheffield model and the analysis of that here showed that alcohol attributable deaths would be reduced by 197 per year in Ireland after 20 years. And the reason why it says after 20 years is because of the nature of drinking and alcohol harm.
Alcohol does damage over time.
Yeah, there's a time lag involved there in many of the serious illnesses such as cirrhosis and cancers. But we're looking at, you know, with a minimum unit price of €1 a year, the analysis says that we would save 200 lives every year. We'd see 6,000 fewer hospital admissions per year, which is a key goal of the Department of Health, because alcohol is a major contributor to the chronic disease crisis we have in our health service at the moment. And it's responsible for 1,500 beds, hospital beds, every single day in this country being occupied. When, as you know, and everyone is aware at this stage, we have a massive problem with admissions and people on trolleys.
I think anybody that knows anything about the issue will know that alcohol, particularly when taken in excess, does a lot of health damage, and that's not really in dispute, and I certainly wouldn't be disputing that with you. The thing that I think perhaps is worth questioning about the policy is, in Scotland, the minimum use price, it's subject to a court challenge, but the proposed price was 50 pence sterling per unit. Am I correct on that?
You are.
Yeah, that works at about 61 or 62 cent. So the Irish minimum pricing that's proposed is dramatically higher than that. And I'm just wondering, for the range of prices that the Sheffield University did research for, would it be fair to say that €1 per unit is right at the top of that range?
No, they looked at above €1 as well. They went below and above it. But I suppose the thing to remember about Scotland as well is that analysis was conducted, you know, prior to 2012. That legislation was introduced in 2012. So we're looking at you know, a price level that was set there 4 or 5 years ago compared to now. So, I mean, it's very important, obviously, that you would adjust for inflation. But also Ireland
well, there hasn't been much inflation in the meantime, but you would accept that the €1 per unit is very significantly higher than the Scottish model.
Oh, it's higher than the Scottish model, but of course we are in a different situation as well in terms of affordability of alcohol in Scotland.
Incomes in Scotland would be lower, so that diminishes that difference. I just want to I'll put it on the webpage for this podcast, because I was in Italy last week and I took a photograph just because I was in a supermarket, and I'm looking at the drinks cabinet, and there's things like Jack Daniels and J&B whiskey and Havana Club rum. The Jack Daniel's whiskey is the dearest. It's $18.99. The other whiskey is $12.99. But there's things like Gordon's gin for $9.99 per bottle. All of those bottles are 40% proof at 0.7 of a litre. And you can work out very quickly, all of those bottles would have a minimum price in Ireland of €28 per bottle if minimum pricing was brought in at €1 per unit, yeah?
Okay.
My math is correct on that.
It depends on the, but at 40% ABV, with a 700ml bottle, you're looking at about €22.
€28 it multiplies that to, for me, but nevertheless, the other thing that I looked at, and I read that Sheffield research because you very kindly sent it to me before we did the interview, but one other thing that I read, and I'm looking at the Fine Gael Manifesto from 2011, and it says on page 26, supporting Irish pubs, Fine Gael recognises the importance of the Irish pub for tourism, rural jobs, and as a social outlet in communities across the country. We support the local pub. We will support the local pub by banning the practice of below-cost alcohol selling, particularly by large supermarkets. Isn't there a danger that an unintended effect of this policy will be just to make pubs more profitable?
Well, there's two things, I suppose, to address there. And the first is when you raise the price of alcohol in Italy. And I suppose the first and important thing to remember there is that Italy has far lower alcohol consumption than Ireland. Mm-hmm. It has almost half of our per capita alcohol consumption. It's on the decline there and has been for some time. They have absolutely no pattern of binge drinking that we have here. And I suppose one of our key issues here, and I suppose in some ways we're not looking at this in its full context, because minimum unit pricing is one measure in a suite of measures contained in the Public Health Alcohol Bill, and it's going to hopefully work in tandem with others. But, I mean, you know, we have normalized drinking to get drunk. It's not just normalized, it's often celebrated. We've normalized the harm that comes with it. Primarily the 3 deaths every single day from alcohol-related harm in this country. And that's one thing we haven't touched on yet, which is that we've talked about pricing and we haven't talked about the huge levels of harm and what minimum unit pricing can hopefully do to reduce that huge level of harm.
But I think they're as a given. I wouldn't dispute them at all. But
I suppose, but just to put in context, when, you know, and a lot of people can point to cheaper alcohol in other countries, but we have a particular issue with alcohol and alcohol harm in Ireland, and our consumption increased in 2014, and the provisional figures from revenue indicate that it's likely to have increased again in 2015, and we're going the wrong direction. So I suppose, you know, the comparisons with somewhere like Italy, you know, they really don't hold in terms of our patterns of alcohol consumption and the levels. But, that's just something I feel it's an important point to make. And we have to address the problem that we have here in Ireland. In terms of the pubs, I mean, this really isn't about protecting pubs. This is about protecting people. And that's why, this is about reducing the deaths from alcohol. It's about reducing the burden on the health service. And crucially, it's about reducing the harm to others. And I mean, you know, alcohol is almost unique in Ireland in terms of the level of the harm that's caused to people other than the drinker. You know, it's a it's a huge driver of crime in this country. The vast, vast majority of public offences, public order offences, are alcohol related. It's a massive.
Not to mention domestic violence.
Yeah, domestic violence. You're exactly right, and it's a huge issue in child welfare and neglect. I mean, you know, you've so many tragic stories all throughout our years. You open your newspaper any day, and it's almost hard not to find a story where some poor person or family have been torn apart by a drink driver. You've got court cases outlining horrific cases of child abuse, and you, as you talk about there, domestic violence, you've sexual assaults, you've all kinds of criminal behavior fueled by alcohol. It's a major driver of suicide and self-harm. You know, we, as a society, we have a massive burden of alcohol-related harm in Ireland. And minimum unit
pricing,
what I'm saying is minimum unit pricing is about addressing that. It's not about addressing any issues the publicans may be having.
I understand that entirely, but I'm sure you'd agree that we want a policy that will address that, and that if it had unintended effects, particularly if they were negative, then that's something to watch out for.
Absolutely.
And my thinking is, and I'm still looking at the photograph of $9.99 for a bottle of Gordon's gin. If that price is raised from $9.99 there to €28 in an Irish off license, then it's not like a tax, because we have, as well as having expensive alcohol, we have one of the most expensive cigarettes in Europe. But that's achieved by taxation. That's to say, most of the price of a packet of fags goes to the government. The extra pricing here would go to the retailer and the manufacturer. Isn't that true?
It is. But one thing, the 990, you're not getting that bottle of 999 and gin in Ireland. I think that's important.
Well, you might get a cheap vodka for 999.
Perhaps. But I suppose,
and the manufacturing cost of all of these is pretty much the same. So, someone in the chain is going to be making a much higher profit.
And but I suppose
Karen, I want to develop the idea. What I worry about is that there are lots of ways to persuade people to drink, and price is one of them. And clearly, if it's a way to persuade people to drink, it can also be a way to persuade people not to drink. But there are lots of other ways to persuade people to drink or not to drink as well. And most people don't buy the cheapest alcohol, because alcohol retailers and manufacturers are smart enough to move people up to more expensive products. They've always got the cheaper products, like snapping at their heels. But if their profit per unit suddenly shoots up, then they have the motivation and the money to put a huge amount of research and investment into other ways of persuading people to drink. Isn't that true?
Well, I suppose your analysis of that situation leaves out one crucial point, which is that minimum unit pricing will reduce consumption. And reduced consumption is reduced sales. Well, the profit from it will go to the manufacturer, or will go to the retailer, but reduced sales will offset that. But it's also important to point out that apart from analysis, there is minimum unit pricing in practice in places, and research from Canada has shown that in operation there, it has reduced consumption, and it has reduced alcohol attributable deaths, it has reduced hospital admissions, and it has reduced crime. And you make a very valid point there. Pricing is not the only measure. And it's not the only measure in the public health alcohol bill either. It addresses all of the key evidence-based areas. And the World Health Organization is very clear about this. The three key areas for reducing alcohol consumption, reducing harmful alcohol consumption in particular, are marketing, pricing, and availability. And all three of those areas are covered in the public health alcohol bill. And I mean, it has a wide range of measures that are essentially about changing the environment, in particular for younger people in this country, about changing the environment they grow up in. I mean, we have measures here about how alcohol is sold, how it's displayed in mixed retail units, about alcohol marketing, advertising, sponsorship. You know, there's a wide range of measures. Health labeling is going to be introduced for the first time. I mean, it's not just about minimum unit pricing. It is the one that has garnered the most attention for perhaps obvious reasons, and it's the one that we're talking about here now, but it isn't that the government has just picked one single issue and said this is what's going to fix everything, because it's not. And nobody's arguing that it is the silver bullet solution, that it is going to, you know, rectify everything overnight. But as part of a suite of measures, it does have a role. And you mentioned excise duty there. And excise duty is important. But the thing to remember about excise duty, and that why at the moment, you know, it doesn't work in some respects, is that retailers can always absorb the cost of an increase in excise and offset it against other goods and still keep the very cheap products very cheap. And that's why would
they want to sell at a loss?
Because alcohol is used at a loss leader. It's used to get people in the door, and it works. And that's why it's been certain products are sold below cost. And I mean, even to define cost as what's below cost is hard, because if you define it as just VAT and excise, And a lot of the very cheapest alcohol skims the top of VAT and excise. That doesn't include all other important costs like manufacturing, transport, retail. So, I mean, you know, to get a specific cost in terms of banning below cost selling is very difficult. And it's why a minimum unit price is quite direct, straightforward and easy to implement.
But the question remains, and I've been in marketing in various different industries, and I know that any retailer, anybody trying to sell something, would be absolutely delighted for the government to set a minimum price for their product, because it means nobody can compete with them on price.
And yet we have an alcohol industry in Scotland and in elsewhere in Europe taking a legal challenge against minimum unit pricing. And the same legal challenge has been threatened here in the alcohol industry here. And when I say alcohol industry, I'm talking about manufacturers and I'm talking about those who represent them as distinct from the on-trade. Have said that they absolutely don't want minimum unit pricing. And there's a reason for that, and because it's a public health measure that has the potential, the very real potential to reduce harmful drinking, to reduce alcohol consumption and improve public health. I mean, if this was, as you're kind of implying, a measure that will drive up profits and be a huge windfall for the alcohol industry, they would be welcoming it with open arms, I think it's fair to say. But they're not.
Well, perhaps not the entire alcohol industry, but some of it for sure.
Because it's a public health measure, and it's designed to reduce consumption and reduce consumption at the most harmful end of drinking. And at the most harmful end of drinking is where a lot of the sales happen as well. And I mean, you know,
one of the, Conor, I'm not sure if you can verify it. I wasn't able to find a source, but one of the figures I heard was that half of all alcohol sold goes to 10% of drinkers. Is that correct?
No. That's a very large figure. I don't know the exact figure off the top of my head, but I can verify that and send it on to you if you like.
That would be great. I'll put it on the page for this. Shows that you shouldn't quote statistics randomly from the internet.
I'm not going to completely cast your assertion off there, but I'm just not 100% sure on that one. But the OECD did look at this, and they've provided a lot of the recent data on this in different countries. So I know where to find it pretty quickly. So I'll send it on to you. But your point, I suppose, is a good one too, is that a lot of the sales are accounted for by a small amount of people when it comes to harmful drinking. And minimum unit pricing can have an impact there in terms of reducing consumption and thereby reducing the harms. And like I said, I mean, if this was just a big windfall, a big payout for an alcohol industry, they wouldn't be going to such lengths to challenge this through the courts. And that's because, you know, this measure...
That's true, but it is strikingly similar to a manifesto commitment from Fine Gael that was explicitly promoted as promoting the Irish pub.
Well, I mean, I suppose I can't speak for Fine Gael, but I can tell you that, you know, at Alcohol Action Ireland, we don't have the interests of publicans at heart, and we fully support minimum unit pricing as a measure to reduce alcohol harm. So do our partners in the Alcohol Health Alliance, the Royal College of Physicians, you know, the public health community, all the medical representative organizations that you could speak to in Ireland. And that's where, you know, that's where our interest lies in this measure. And there's a significant body of, you know, evidence there to show that pricing works as a measure to reduce harm.
Conor Cullen, Head of Advocacy and Communications at Alcohol Ireland, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks very much, William.
If you like the Here's How podcast, please rate and review the show on iTunes and other podcast providers. Share it on Facebook and Twitter. Tell your friends. But most of all, make your views heard. Call us on 076-603-5060.
That's almost the end of episode 25 of Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, published on the 12th of January 2016. There's a link to Conor Cullen's Twitter and Alcohol Ireland, along with links to all the research we mentioned in this episode's page on the hearshow.ie website. If you can think of a topic or if you want to suggest someone to interview, and that could be you, then let me know. If you like the podcast, please go on iTunes and write a nice review. Also, please like the show on Facebook, please follow at Here's How Podcast on Twitter, and of course, subscribe to the show. You can use iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or any other podcast app or software. You can do all of that or get in touch with the show right from www.hearshow.ie. or you could go out and tell all your friends about how great the podcast is. The next show will be uploaded shortly. The Here's How podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.